Life is just so full of disappointments, isn't it? Please go to hell.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. For now, today's episode is Season 10, Episode 8, Baby, You Can Drive My Car. And now here are your podcast drivers, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave.
Very rarely do we have news at the top of an episode. Today we have 5,000 pieces of news. Hmm. For the first one, I'm going to throw to Dave, who can possibly explain it more concisely than I can.
Visual aids that used to be a nice little embed are now going to be a link for technical reasons at our podcast hosting company that I will not bore you with. So when you go to the page and you don't see the pictures right away, do not panic. We're still doing them. Just click on the link and it'll load up a new page where there will all be one big page of all the visual aids. End of story.
The other piece of news that happened literally while we were recording our podcasts on episode 6 and 7 of season 10 is, as you have probably heard and already digested if you listen to this podcast, they are bringing back 90210 for a limited series this summer. 6 out of the 8 original teen stars were slated to be in it. Not Shannon Doherty, and Luke Perry, alas, was never attached. We will get to him in a second. So a lot of people have been asking on social media, are we going to cover this show? Yes, of course. How could we not? Even though it's not going to be like regular 90210, apparently it's going to be sort of a meta show about the cast trying to revive it. So they're all playing heightened versions of themselves. Basically, this is 90210 meets Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah, I think it's supposed to have a discomfort comedy bent. And you know how good this cast is at comedy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it comes from the same producers that did the short-lived show So Notorious in the early 2000s, which start possibly the late 2000s, maybe 2010. Anyway, Tori Spelling was the star of that, as the title would suggest. A very young Zachary Quinto was like her best friend on that show. It's a little footnote of history.
Oh my God,
anyway.
I didn't know that.
Amazing. Yeah, it only lasted for one season. But anyway, it's the same producer. So I imagine the same kind of idea. So yes, we will cover that. What will we be doing by then? Will we have finished season 10 of 90210 by that time? Well, here's another announcement. Starting with our episode dropping April 1st, we are going to start covering Melrose Place. I dipped in and out of Melrose Place at the time because I was a 90210 person. And by then, I was barely watching that. Melrose Place was more my sister's show. That was the show she watched with my mom, which was sweet. Or inappropriate. I don't know. She was in high school. But we're going to starting April 1st, we will be alternating every other week, Melrose and 90210. So April 1st, it will be Melrose Place season 1, episode 1. The following week, it will be 90210 season 10, episode 11, etc. Sarah, your thoughts?
Yes. If people within the sound of my voice think that this is a continuing campaign to somehow cover every single thing Jack Wagner ever did outside of General Hospital, I think accidentally you're correct. Peter Burns. I mean, that's like so many years from now. But anyway, yes, our esteemed colleague John Ramos and I were loyal Melrose watchers and had a like bar in Midtown that we would go to and watch it. Aww. And get free wings. And John had a promotional t-shirt for Melrose Place that he wore until it fell apart. And this is very exciting. And yet also will be kind of boring because the show took a while to figure out what it was doing, and
yeah,
then it forgot and Lisa Rinna showed up. So yeah, we hope that you will come with us on this journey.
Yes. So if you want to pregame for the April 1st podcast, you can watch it on Hulu. It is streaming there, or you can buy the DVDs, of course. And hot tip from me to you, they are under $20, at least season one was on CBS's store. So if you want to do that, it's way, 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 it's like a third of the price of what Amazon is charging for it, amazingly. So news you can use. Okay, so what we'll do when the summer show of 90210 starts, we will suspend regular coverage of Melrose, and if we're still in season 10 by then, 90210, and then, you know, just put that on hold while this limited summer series is going on. But we will, I imagine, have lots of notice for that with a premiere date, so we'll keep you posted on that. Other news, Sarah.
Yes, we got a lot of comments on social media and elsewhere wondering why we had not addressed the untimely passing of Luke Perry. We will get to that in a minute. But just to keep in mind, generally going forward, we do record these a couple of weeks in advance. So that's why we weren't ignoring it. We weren't, you know, holding our fire for various other places where we were talking about it. We just, like, it happened like, you know, a day after
the day after we recorded.
Yeah. So, alas, we will get to it. First, another, passing in the 90210 family, Jed Rush Allen, who also played CC Capwell and a bunch of other things on, daytime dramas. Jed Allen, who played Rush Sanders, passed away a few days ago. He was 84, which means he was in his mid 60s when he was on 90210 and did not look it to me.
No, so he looked good.
Rush, we will miss you and your fantastic ring that you always wore, that we always point to in the visual aids. But yes, that was another passing that occurred last week. But of course, the big news is Luke Perry.
Yes. Sarah and I were, we were invited to talk about him in other outlets. So I wrote something for Decider. Sarah was on the Pop Culture, a special episode of the Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast, and we will link to both of those in the show notes. I mean, it's, you know, it's really sad. The saddest part is that, you know, usually when someone is in the news, there's a lot of like problematic stories that like sneak out about them to try and like cut through the hagiography. But every story that anyone had to share about Luke Perry was like so sweet, like stories about him being wonderful at fan conferences, like remembering people from year to year by name. There was a story that Colin Hanks told about being on the same flight with Luke Perry and him coming back like and calming down a kid that was kicking off
with a
balloon. I mean, he just, you know, and I feel like he didn't get a lot of coverage, you know, as a tabloidy person. And it seems like this is why, just because he was lovely.
Yeah. And it made it even more. I don't often think like, oh, you know, I'd like to meet this person who I've been covering for so many years. Like, to this day, I dread being in the same building as James Vanderbeek, because he would be absolutely justified in punching me in the face. And he is another one who I think would not do that, and who completely leaned into the Dawson-ness and has a really good sense of humor.
Yep.
And was like, as we're recording this, this college thing was blowing up yesterday, and it was Operation Varsity Blues, and he's been hilarious about that on Twitter. But now I am disappointed that I never got to meet or talk to Luke Perry even a little bit about this experience, because he and that character, Dylan McKay, had so much meaning for so many people to a degree that was surprising. I don't know if you, Tara, had this same experience with it, but like, we're in it with this character all the time. It's our job.
Yeah.
So at least my sense of how this death would be received, I guess, by the culture was like way off. I was very surprised at how huge and like devastating a crater this left.
Yeah.
For people, like, to the point where my dad sent an email. It was like, everything okay over there?
Yeah.
And yeah, just my phone blowing up when it happened. And so, yeah, I mean, I hope wherever he is on the other side of the veil, that he feels appreciated, because it really was quite an event. A shitty one, to be sure, but. And I hope his family is getting at least some tiny comfort from how beloved and respected he was and all the wonderful things that people said about him, which we will proceed to do even more of right now.
We will. Well, I just wanted to add, you forget what a generation defining crush he was, because it really was like everyone within 5 years plus or minus our age was just devastated. Like, well, really,
I did not have a crush on him and really never had, and was like, all right, I get it, but I don't get it. But this is like weird. But with all the stories of like what a bench he was, he is hotter to me now.
Yeah, for
like,
sure.
Retroactively applied hotness because he was a good person.
Yep. Well, to close up our fond remembrances of Luke Perry before getting back to ripping on him / Dylan. Sorry, we have to. Speaking of our
That's
job,
the game, folks.
Our listener Rose wanted us to make a list of Dylan's best moments and to contribute some of her own. She also wanted to shout out her friend Elizabeth for recommending this podcast to her. So thank you to Elizabeth on behalf of Rose and us. So let's start with Rose's list of best Dylan moments. Before you start, Sarah, I just wanted to add, she sent these to me saying she spent the entire weekend in her pajamas, like watching the pop marathon, watching on Hulu, like she just was marinating in Luke Perry. And I was like, I spend every weekend in my pajamas in front of the TV. I don't get it. And then she was like, well, I have a kid. Like, oh, okay. But anyway, so this is the fruit of her her weekend long deep dive into Dylan. Proceed.
Number one, when the flirting begins between Dylan and Brenda out on a jog, he pulls up beside her on his motorcycle and she says, your bike. And Dylan says, hop on. My bike, that is, possibly because his butt was kind of teeny and if she hopped on it, she would have broken it. Sorry, but it was true.
That's true. Number two, isn't it romantic? The season one episode, Dylan rolls out from under Brandon's car, all covered in grease. Brenda
that
sees
was,
him in the...
That was a little hot. I'll give you that one.
Super hot. That's also, she looks down on him and he's still in the driveway and he like looks over his shoulder up at her. That was a gift that got a lot of play on social media last week. Brenda sees him in the shower. He has a fight with his dad, which precedes his and Brenda's dramatic first kiss. And at the end, he has a cute talk with Jim that establishes what their relationship will grow into.
Number three, there's the Valentine's Day episode when Dylan keeps his date plans a secret from Brenda and they end up donating blood because when he was a kid, he got in an automobile accident, that works in quotes, he had to get a blood transfusion and it made him want to give back. Aw.
Number four, Dylan looks totally foxy in the Clyde costume in the season two Halloween episode. Fact. Super fact. He tells Brandon to drift, small guy. Also
possibly
a favorite Sarah moment.
Favorite.
And at the end, he assures Kelly that she shouldn't blame herself for that guy almost raping her. Oh, Jimmy.
Oh, yeah. Boo. Number five, Rose knows this is awful, but back in the day, she totally shipped Dylan and Kelly. It's all right. And that was peak hot Dylan for Rose when Kelly ends up at his cabana and he's standing there in a white tank top waiting for her. And then there's a little emoji with heart eyes.
Yep. Number six, probably Rose's favorite scene from the entire series is when Dylan and Kelly are in the pool and he tells her, I chose you. I want you. I have always wanted you. Swoon.
Aw. Number seven, even though it's one of the more terrible episodes, Rose likes Dylan in the Senior Ditch Day episode. He and Steve jab each other all day, but they look like they had a lot of fun being extras in the mouthwash commercial, especially Dylan swinging from the uvula. Agree. He has the biggest smile on his face, and we so rarely got to see it. Agree. I think that increased its power, actually.
Yep. Number eight, in season four, when the Brandon Lucinda Dylan Kelly love quadrangle is exposed and Dylan goes to the Walsh house to confront Brandon about kissing Kelly and takes a swing at him and ends up hitting Steve instead. And then they all sit on the lawn and talk it out like bros and then go inside to have some of Cindy's microwave brownies. Really, truly a classic moment.
It's true. Number nine, post Brenda, Rose likes Dylan in the episode when he and Val and Jonesy go to get Dylan's loot from the scamily. And also in the episode when Val fakes him out with the tattoo of his name on her boob. Upon reflection, Rose isn't 100% sure whether she likes Dylan in that episode or Val's boobs. Checks out.
Fair. And number 10, in the episode where Dylan tells Andrea he knows about her affair, he seems pretty genuine, saying he has no judgment and is there for her if she needs to talk. It is true that their relationship was not one that was explored a whole bunch, but the two of them had nice moments like that. Great it's list, true. Rose. Sarah, do you have any to add?
You're goddamn right I do. And look, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that my favorite month in that asinine Dudes of California University calendar is not one Deshaun Globetrotter Hardell, because it is, but... Running an extremely close second is Dylan galumphing into the frame in his snorkeling gear with boxers over it.
Yep.
In retrospect, it is clear that Luke Perry is not taking himself very seriously, and that's peeking through Dylan's customary taking of himself super seriously. And he has such a droll expression under the goggles, and I've always loved it.
Yeah, he also does a like sort of heroic pose while they throw water on him from off screen, which is really cute.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rose's list was great, so I don't have a ton to add. I was always a Dylan person, as I said earlier, and even watching it through again as an adult, I still think that he has a sweetness in the early years. And now that more stories have come out about what Luke Perry was really like, I have to think a lot of Dylan's sweetness is what Perry brought to the role. Mm-hmm. And as a crusty old crone, my favorite Dylan moments now are when he's vulnerable and reaches out for Jim and Cindy to be surrogate parents, since Iris and Jack are pretty worthless in that department. When Cindy tries to help make peace with Jim and Dylan after the Mexican adventure with Brenda, it doesn't hold, but I like the thought that all the writers and performers put into creating that relationship between Dylan and the Walsh parents. Dylan is kind of shit in the later years, which we will get to today, but I'm never mad when he tells David that he sucks, because David sucks.
I have to agree. Not just that David sucks. I'm thinking of that letter from Cindy with the Geneva font. Better, yep. Teehee. Yes, David sucks, doy. But although I was never a huge Dylan guy, I do find him more sympathetic now for the reasons Tara cited, given that he had to raise himself, basically. He's just looking for a family and a routine and protecting himself with cool armor should those things not work out for him. And by cool armor, sometimes I mean a Baja top, and I should probably just put my loathing of that clothing. Hey, I rhymed, just like Byron. In a time capsule and bury it. But overall, I meant what I said last week on Twitter. Dylan was frequently an annoying tryhard, but seldom boring. And that was thanks to Luke Perry.
From Rose, all of us here, and probably all of you out there as well. Thanks for everything, Luke Perry.
And rest in peace, Jones.
All right. On to the episode. Our A/only plot. Dylan gets gay bashed. Gina dishes him for David. And Kelly is a bitch about a bunch of stuff, including Janet and Steve's treasure hunt. All right. So Janet holds a tea party for Donna and Kelly. Donna announces that Noah's moving some of his stuff into the beach apartment and then lamely asks if it's okay, so that Kelly doesn't really have much choice but to say that it is. Although she and Janet exchange a look, but then Janet says most of her stuff is already at the Walsh house, and Donna says it's only until they can find a place that she and Noah can both afford. So Kelly's going to live in a 3-bedroom apartment on the beach by herself?
With her filthy lucre from Now Wear This?
Yeah.
And a question mark?
Uh-huh. So the subject then changes to the wedding. Janet is way behind planning it, like, has not set a date, which leads me to wonder why she was having what essentially amounted to a rehearsal in the last episode. Also, her parents aren't returning her phone calls. I thought after the terrible engagement party, they had finally come around. Whatever. Also, Sam
is budget to pay the actors. Got it.
Right. Also, Samantha's in London and Rush is on a singles cruise because, of course, he is. And so is his pinky ring. Meanwhile, Steve is like on the couch sleeping while they're having this conversation. And we see he's dreaming about a killer bachelor party at the club that ends with Janet licking whipped cream off him. And she wakes him up to ask about having beer and glasses or bottles at the reception. And I guess he still has a boner, because instead of answering, he just kisses her. Okay. That Drew Andrew from the community center then is in Dylan's office in front of Dylan's desk, like he's there for a job interview. Dylan proposes getting someone in to teach photography, adding, that was my dad's hobby, like A, since when, and B, this is a subtle way of reminding us you once had a dad, in case that's about to be a plot point again, cough. Andy says they would need a dark room, and Dylan picks up a pen to write a check to pay for one, not sure how he knows how much it would cost or how long it would take to get permits to build one at the center, but sure.
Also, how much money does he have left? Is this also, just a, you know, below the aquifer well that keeps filling up with dollars? I don't understand Dylan's finances. Neither do the writers.
They're also on the cusp of this expense being extremely unnecessary. Like, obviously, I know that photographers do still, you know, print film prints, I guess. But like, at this point, it's 1999 or So, you know, digital photography is coming up very fast. Whatever. Andrew's happy to receive the check, but would also like Dylan's help with his midnight basketball. Like, does Dylan look like an athlete to you? Dylan declines. Andrew says that Miguel and Arturo, the kids from the hotel, still talk about Dylan all the time, so Dylan should consider volunteering, but Dylan doesn't bite. Gina has entered at the end of this conversation. When Andrew leaves, she also encourages Dylan to volunteer, saying that the two of them could do it together because she wants to do more things together. He will only commit to breakfast at the Peach Pit as a couple. And when she's gone, he tosses the pamphlets that Andrew has given him in the trash. And then Kelly is running into David at the Peach Pit and telling him his father is a pig. Evergreen. She also orders pancakes to go because we all know how well those travel. Kelly recaps that Jackie kicked Mel out and why. And David is unconcerned, saying that Mel and Jackie break up and get back together all the time, even though we only know of it having happened the once after they got divorced. Like, this isn't something we know about their characters.
Yeah.
Anyway, Kelly says this time it's really over. Gina enters to ask what's up, and David describes the situation without much concern. Gina asks how Kelly found out about Mel, and Kelly says she didn't ask, and Jackie has too much class to say, which is also not consistent with Jackie's character.
No, and not why we enjoy Jackie, but sure.
Sure. David takes off, so Kelly starts laying into Gina about the part she does know Gina played in clip two.
I'm just curious, how much does it cost to break up a family these days? 40, 50 bucks a lap dance?
Well, it really depends on the cup size. No one forced Mel to come down there.
Did you see him there?
No, I didn't. Oh, look, and by the way, I wasn't alone on my little business venture. Why don't you scold someone else now?
So, it's moving day. I got some food for the troops. Steve and Matt are gonna help out.
Shouldn't take long then, should it?
No, it shouldn't. Look, I want a treat for dinner tonight. Kind of roommate bonding, you know?
I said blueberry.
Okay.
One of those rare moments where Noah is kind of funny.
Elsewhere. She's such a cramp.
This whole storyline.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So Janet is getting the nursery ready when Steve checks in just in time for her to start crying about being a lumbering bride and not having finished baby prep. Steve loves her and neither of them has anything to be insecure about. She is becalmed, but when he comes back, she would like them to set a wedding date. Dylan and Andrew are leaving dinner when Andrew makes a reference to the weight he's lost since a breakup. Dylan assumes she knew her way around a kitchen and Andrew corrects his pronoun because he is gay. Dylan is, of course, unconcerned about Andrew's sexual identity, but has waited until after dinner to say definitively that he's not going to volunteer at the community center. Andrew is disappointed, but adds that he's quitting at the end of the month because the job requires him to be closeted. Dylan tells him to come out because he definitely knows more about this than a gay man. Ugh, Dylan. But Andrew tells Dylan that Patty, his co-director at the center, is a homophobe and wouldn't be okay with Andrew coaching her son's basketball team if she knew. And amazingly, Dylan tries to argue about this some more and is very, very quickly corrected in clip three.
Oh, come on, man. This is the 90s. You gotta be kidding me. If you can teach the fundamentals of the game, who cares whether you're gay or not?
Locker rooms, showers, young kids. Not jumping to any conclusions? Because a lot of people would.
Yeah, well, I ain't one of them. Okay. All right?
All right.
What's wrong, faggots? Couldn't find a room? Now you listen there, freak. I'm gonna teach you guys a lesson about hanging out in parking lots.
So a beating ensues, unfortunately. And also, Dylan, so what had happened before this was Dylan had put his hand on the back of Andrew's neck and like playfully fake punched his stomach when these gay bashers jumped to a 50% correct conclusion, which is weird, but I mean, okay, I guess.
And like, they were definitely waiting around in the style of opponents in a kung fu movie. just like, you know, in a ring waiting for the protagonist mm-hmm. to show up and then fighting them sort of in order. And then Dylan naturally manages to grab the baseball bat from one of them and be throttling him because,
yeah,
Dylan gets hurt from punching someone. Okay. Uh-huh.
Yes. Andrew gets the worst of it. His face is not looking good. So then Steve is coming back to the nursery. Janet has put up the wallpaper border all crooked, couldn't fix it, got overwhelmed and gave up, resuming her panicking about how far they've fallen behind in their various schedules. But while he was gone, Steve got an idea and Janet will have to trust him on it. Back in his suite, Dylan hangs up with a detective on their case while Andrew sits on the couch, patched up but still holding his ribs. The one guy Dylan managed to keep at the scene wouldn't ID his friends, so the cops need a statement from Andrew, which he refuses to give. Dylan once again decides to lecture the gay man in clip 4.
Don't you think you have some kind of, you know, obligation to the gay community here?
Look, I was lucky to get in and out of the hospital quietly. If I speak out, it opens a floodgate of media attention.
Maybe that's not such a bad thing.
Reporters, newspaper headlines. Gay community center director bashed. But here's what people say off camera. Who let that pervert near our kids?
Andrew, if you're silent, this kind of thing could happen to someone else.
If you want to take a stand, make the statement for both of us.
Oh, Sarah, do you want to go into why this is a wrong thing to say to the survivor of a crime?
I mean, it's just incredibly presumptuous, naturally. And I, you know, my main note on this, like in my own notes, was this is a total Brandon storyline that he'd just be braying at this guy about how he should comport himself in the aftermath of an assault.
Yeah.
Cool. Good idea.
So Gina enters then and asks what happened to Andrew. He quickly says it was a car wreck and gets out of there. She then notices a bandage on Dylan's arm. He says he got in a fight. When he says he doesn't want to talk about it, she drops it and changes the subject. Okay, her mother called to say there's a 2-for-1 special to Denver, and would he like to go? Since when does she live in Denver?
Mm-hmm. Isn't she from the Valley?
Yes, that's what I thought too. Whatever. Dylan's question is, since when do you want to spend time with Bobby? And not, for instance, since when does she live in Denver? But Gina is moved that Bobby invited them. And when Dylan keeps picking apart the suggestion of going to see her, Gina drops that too and says this instead, clip 5.
Do you know my favorite color, Dylan? Or, I don't know who my first boyfriend was. I know everything about you.
I'm tired, Gina.
Because I ask, and then when you answer me, I hang on your every word. See, the difference between me and you is that I'm in love with you.
That's not fair.
No kidding.
I asked for this clip because I thought it was just a really nice acting moment for Vanessa Marcil, that she almost makes you feel sorry for Gina, whereas I think a lot of other actors on this show, certainly, you would just feel frustrated. Because she just keeps, like, this is a conversation they've now had 8 times.
Mm-hmm.
He can't be that for you. And he's told you that. Leave.
Yeah.
Just leave. Like, mm-hmm. We get it. He's kind of foxy, but you're Vanessa Marcil. You can do better. She doesn't.
You're not going to.
You should have, but you didn't.
Nope. Oh, God. So then Janet and Steve have gathered the gang at the Peach Pit after dark by day to tell them they're all going on a scavenger hunt, although what they describe is more like a treasure hunt in that they're going from clue to clue, not just collecting stuff. Words have meaning, people. Anyway, they're rolling all the pre-wedding parties into this thing. There's also a prize for the winners. Despite the fight we just saw them have, by the way, Dylan and Gina seem fine, or at least are standing together and faking it for some reason. Everyone has to do the treasure/scavenger hunt in teams, and they have split up 2 of the couples. Kelly is all pissy that she's been partnered with Noah and David. Gina and Dylan are, however, together. So in the car, David tries to make conversation about the task, and Kelly is a bitch about it, wanting to bitch him out about his denial about Mel and why he's not siding with Jackie like he apparently has every other time Mel has cheated on her. Noah tries to help and doesn't in clip six.
Some of them were dancers, not prostitutes, Kel.
What exactly was the dancer to prostitute ratio? Because knowing that, I think, would make me and my mom and my little sister feel so much better.
Fuck you.
Yeah, not that I'm surprised that Kelly is conflating two different kinds of sex work, but like dancers are not sex workers. It's not the same.
Also, Mel was not trafficked into the club.
No, he was not. So then Donna and Matt make it to a copy shop where they're supposed to make a calendar featuring 12 different body parts, and they will get extra points for photocopying their butt. Clip seven.
My butt.
I just isolated that so we would have it.
There is important. Absolutely. This is 28 pounds of stuff in a 5-pound push-up bra this episode, mm-hmm. but that was actually funny. I did laugh at that. My butt. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, the rest of the clip is she's like, my butt, your butt. And they like sort of banter back and forth. Like she can do comedy. She's not always awful at it. She's just usually tries way too hard. But anyway.
Well, and my note on this was that I wish that that team had stayed in place for the rest of the episode. Cause it just reminded me, and we haven't really seen this in like since season 9, but like mm-hmm. Matt and Donna's chemistry is so much easier and less like fraught with the being of bitches about things.
Uh-huh.
It was just really a pleasure to watch them working together. It was fun.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Anyway, calendar stuff ensues and eats up so much delicious time. I didn't care how dumb it was outside the coffee shop. Outside the shop, David tries to get Kelly to go easy on Noah. Like for some reason, I don't know why he cares. Donna's rushing out to the next task when Noah begs her to switch cars with him so that he can get away from Kelly. Understandable, irrespective of his actual guilt in this particular situation. But Donna's a doormat and does it. So now Noah is Matt's partner and David and Kelly are now on the leading team because Matt is an even bigger doormat. Didn't say like, all right, we're in the lead then, but whatever. And I guess Dylan has taken back the convertible that Kelly bought him because that's what he's driving, as Gina whines that he should get a CD player instead of relitigating the previous night's sad fight. And Dylan is focused on getting to the copy place, but Gina wants to bag it and rescue a stray dog that they pass on the street instead. Dylan declares that they're not getting a dog, and she snits that if they did, it would be doing something together. And he tries to placate her by promising sex later, but she is wise to that play. More stuff. Matt is stopped at a light with a blow-up doll beside him that's apparently part of the next clue when a motorcycle cop pulls up beside the car, and it's dumb. Team original beach apartment roommates get to this house that puts up their decorations too early for Christmas and get caught by the homeowner who, lucky for them, met her husband on a scavenger hunt and helps them keep their lead. Gina and Dylan arrive then, the former still concerned about the dog. David actually listens to Gina and takes her back to try and find it. So now Gina and David are together. Dylan is on Donna and Kelly's team because he was a dick about the dog and in general. So after commercials, Team Bitch plus Donna are on their way to the next stop when Andrew calls to tell Dylan that the cops found the other attackers and when Dylan should show up for the lineup. Dylan passive-aggressively tries to get Andrew to go too, which Andrew ignores. And when Kelly and Donna ask about the call and Dylan's bandage, he bites their head off in clip 8.
Let's just say I had a bad day yesterday and I don't really feel much like a scavenger hunter, right?
Yeah, we noticed. And apparently so did Gina, which is too bad because if you try, it's more fun across the board. Relationships, too.
So now you two are concerned about Gina?
Well, if you can't spend an hour in a car, what are you two doing together?
Having fun. That's enough for me.
Dylan, you've been married before. You know what it's like to be with the right person. I'm surprised you'd settle for less.
Shut up.
I mean, I assume that even Kelly is not such an egomaniac that she means herself. Like, she's talking about Dylan and his wife. Still, mind your own business, Jesus.
Well, really.
Ugh. Anyway. Gina and David bring the dog to a vet. The dog is super cute. The vet will be able to find her home with one of her tags. David's ready to resume treasure hunting, but Gina says they have to wait and make sure the dog is okay and continues bitching about Dylan's many recent failings. David noncommittally says he's sure that was rough, and Gina expands the scope of the Denver retcon in clip 9.
Yeah, it's not like I exactly jump at the chance to show someone the shoebox I grew up in.
Because it's not in Denver? Is that why? Why do I care? Then Gina gives...
couldn't pay Bobby to be in this episode either? Sure.
Right. Like, it's not like they needed to change that in order to explain why Bobby is not around more. Like, nobody's parents are around that much. Who cares? Whatever.
Well, and this continues. Remember that we're talking about this when certain provenances become clear in the next episode? Because it's like, why is this a thing?
Yep.
It's completely unnecessary. Anyway.
So then Gina gives David her cutest smile for helping her get the dog, and he is actually cute back, other than his hair, which you can see in the visual aids, silhouetted against a wall of glass bricks. It's all spiked out and looks really stupid. Anyway, he's cute back, joking about how hard it was for him to help her, until he adds that he knows Gina wishes it were Dylan there instead of him. She wishes Dylan were more like David. Ugh, God.
No.
There are other men on Earth. Like, these are not your only choices.
Do yourself and Matt a favor and get together with him, please.
Honestly. Oh, God. So then Dylan, in footy pajamas, goes to a mattress store and gets on a bed with a sales guy while Kelly takes a picture. And then we get this, clip 10.
Where are you going? Relax.
This was just, I felt, remembering for the earlier part of the episode, like these cute Dylan moments. And like, this reminded me of the scuba outfit for the calendar, and for when he was dressed up as like a mouse germ and this skinny little legs. Like, obviously Luke Perry really loved doing stuff like this. And like, his whole checking of his trap on the footy pajamas is really funny.
Yeah.
It was just like it was interesting timing for some of the more charming Dylan stuff, given that he just passed. Anyway, yep. He looks cute in those pajamas, too. I would.
He does. Noah then phones Kelly looking for Donna, and when he mentions an impending run-in with the law, she snits back about his most recent arrest at the club. Like, there really have been so many arrests, Kelly. Come on. Anyway, she hangs up on him, and Donna wants to know what Kelly's problem with Noah is. I don't know why Kelly doesn't just say it's the same problem that Donna herself had with him in literally the last episode, until the homeless person conveniently died.
Also,
but she doesn't.
Raped Valerie. Hi.
Also, he drove drunk. Like, could have killed someone. Like, it just goes on and on. Whatever.
Also, he thinks it's Mozart.
Anyway, Kelly does not say that. She says this, clip 11.
I think he cuts corners to get what he wants, like running a strip joint for extra cash.
Sure.
It's not,
but
really cutting corners, though. Like, it's a...
No, that's... I mean, that's...
expansion. It
exactly. It's creating a new revenue stream. It's enterprising, if anything. Anyway, fortunately for Donna, that's when the mattress sales guy solves a math problem that gives them the address for the party, so Donna doesn't have to answer Kelly's actually kind of legit response. Then the vet comes out with the dog, who is dehydrated and malnourished from being on the street. Gina declares she's going to take the dog home, but the dog has actually been reported missing. Her name is Joan. Her owner is on her way. Gina gets all indignant about Joan's owner's unworthiness, leaves her number, and departs with Joan. No, you don't get
it works.
To do that. The
David
vet would
actually
not allow it.
I love David's like, who names a dog Joan?
Fair.
I don't feel like that was scripted, and it was pretty funny.
Yeah. So then everyone but David and Gina end up at the party address in a park. And since Matt and Noah only made it because they gave up and called the emergency number, Team Donna and Dead Weight win. Then Gina and David show up, and we learn that Gina is such a great dog owner that she has left Joan in the car. No. Not how you treat a dog you have just rescued. I hope she destroyed everything.
Well, and all the Jones are in the car because Nat is there as the wedding photographer.
Right.
Spoiler. Sorry.
Right. Right. I forgot. Anyway, Gina uses David's offer to take Joan temporarily as a cudgel against Dylan, who doesn't really care if David takes Joan and Gina and says so. Anyway, they are at the final clue, which tells them the park is a location that will unite 2.5 people for all time because it's a surprise wedding. Someone plugs in the lights they stole from the old lady's house. Nat hits play on a wedding march CD. Janet quickly processes down the tiny aisle, looking very pretty in a very late 90s square neckline with spaghetti straps. Steve looks fine, but who cares? A wedding occurs, even with snot. Janet is a very pretty crier. I mean, it's sweet, but whatever.
Well, yeah.
We will get back to Steve and Janet's wedding festivities, but first, we have a message for Vonnie.
Vonnie's sister Sally writes, quote, "It is Vonnie's 40th birthday in March, and she got me hooked on this podcast years ago, and we have been listening and laughing from Brisbane, Australia ever since. We both find it hilarious and had no idea what a prick Brandon was when we watched it growing up. We didn't either. Or how badly Brenda pronounces everything. We didn't either. We were surprised how sad our inner teenage selves were at the passing of Luke Perry, and we both thoroughly enjoyed reading the article Tara wrote for Decider." That will be in our show notes. "It was spot on with our thoughts and feelings about recent events, especially the pot-smashing climax to their first date. The recorded from TV videotape of that episode got a workout at our house." That's very cute.
That's the aforementioned, isn't it romantic? Vonnie is currently using Again With This as her Tuesday morning train commute material and has deemed season 10, quote, "a flaming pile of trash with characters I don't remember and are awful. It's fantastic."
Well, Vonnie, T-Bone and your fellow March birthday or Buncey are delighted to present a very special 40th birthday list of five other things Dylan broke on the show besides that pot outside the Bellage.
Number one, a French girl's cerise, apparently. Oh, Sarah, I can't believe you used that.
It was the best one. Number two, the surfboard of that bully who was picking on Surf Betty Sarah in the green room.
Number three, a bottle of the caterer's best well scotch at Mel and Jackie's wedding.
Very wasteful. Number four, the law, more times than we can count, drugs, DUIs, cross-border cons. And we will include the laws of gravity in this one because of Dylan's architectural forelock back in the early seasons. Maybe the character's name should have been Max Hold.
Number five, last but certainly not least, the hearts of millions with his untimely passing.
May he and Shadowcaster be reunited in heaven. And may you, Vonnie, enjoy your natal day with a pinch of delicious cumin. From all of us here at Again With This, and from Sally.
Happy birthday, Vonnie! After the last commercial, we find out the park was there something old. The mattress Dylan apparently bought them was something new. Christmas shit was borrowed, and the body parts calendar was something blue. Fine. Steve acknowledges Donna's win in the scavenger/treasure hunt, for which she is awarded the most worthless thing in the universe. Clip 12.
A gift certificate to the beach pit.
Every day is a gift certificate at the beach pit.
Honestly.
We filled it up with $0 because you don't need them. Have some pie.
Hilariously, not even dumb baby Donna can pretend to be psyched about this. But suddenly, Dylan is drinking mineral water and, by the way, toasting with it, which is bad luck. The gist is that Steve somehow tricked a great woman into marrying him, which is true. And then they dance and agree that they don't miss their parents. It's not how either of them imagined their wedding, but they're both happy. Kelly can't even stop being a bitch about everything at the reception, forcing Noah to stop her and say he really is sorry about Mel and Jackie. Kelly makes a bitch face at him, of course, and the conversation then takes a left turn off a philosophical cliff in clip 13. Philosophical cliff.
I know you're upset with me, but as far as Mel goes, he had nothing at all to do with this whole thing.
He probably thinks it's not cheating, because while he's paying these women for his excitement, it's just a job to them, right?
No one was victimized. They were there because they wanted to be.
You know, you have a very bright future in porn. Kel, just hear Mel, please.
Okay, for example, this one dancer named Trina. She's got three little kids at home. Dancing at night puts food on the table for them. It also leaves her days free so she can take care of them.
Are you attempting to justify what you did?
No, but people make do. They make mistakes.
At least the scene ends before we also have to hear Donna be all, yeah, people make mistakes. I have learned to accept every mistake Noah makes because that is the condition of being in a relationship with him. But gross. So Kelly is then all warm and fuzzy about the wedding couple and cake tableau. And Matt takes off advising Kelly on how to dive for the bouquet. Kelly comments to Dylan that Janet is a beautiful bride, and he creepily says this, clip 14.
Doesn't hold a candle to you on your wedding day.
That's weird. And he wasn't there.
Dun, dun, dun.
So at this point in my notes, I have, he wasn't there. Were photos even taken? This was the past. It's not like they would have Instagrammed the party. Lots of stuff in the past used to happen where no one ever took even one picture. We'll come back to this, of course. Dylan then goes over to tell Gina he's sorry about the dog and about negging the plans to go meet her mom. But she is the one who's sorry because she never should have moved into the hotel. She didn't do it to leech off him. She just wanted to be closer to him and figured if they were ever going to end up like Steve and Janet, they should spend more time together. But Dylan bluntly tells her he doesn't think they are going to end up like Janet and Steve. Like, yeah, I think she's got it.
And yet she doesn't, because you keep having this conversation.
Mm-hmm. So then in the lobby, David says they still have to give the dog back. Gina knows, but would like him to take her somewhere. She can't go back to the party and doesn't want his cash for a cab. And he, in turn, doesn't just want to hang out with her tonight and see her go back with Dylan tomorrow. So then Dylan pays the reception tab and sends Steve and Janet up to the penthouse. But they say they made other plans. We don't hear what those are. Fine. As they return Christmas ladies, Christmas shit, Kelly is done being a bitch about Noah moving in and lets him and Donna have the beach apartment to make them to themselves that night. She leaves and Donna says she's happy Noah was able to move Kelly with the story of Trina, the dancer slash single mom. Donna and Noah are kissing when Christmas lady comes out with eggnog and invites them back for Christmas Eve. And when she goes back inside, Saint Donna opens her heart even more. Clip 15.
You know, I was just thinking, maybe we could help her. Trina, the dancer.
Trina doesn't actually exist. Remember that movie Demi Moore did when she played a stripper?
There's no Trina?
Yeah, there's lots of Trinas out there. Kelly wouldn't listen to me, so I told her the story about this woman.
Who you made up.
You asked me to patch things up with Kelly. That's what I'm doing. Who's it hurting anyway? To Steve and Janet.
Okay. I have some notes. First of all, his, like, toasting arm motion is like he's in a silent movie. Or like in, A Christmas Carol. He just like takes a full backswing, like to Steve and Janet. Like, okay, Vincent Young, calm down. We know what a toast is. Second of all, Team Noah. I kind of love that.
Oh,
he's like,
no, yeah, really?
Yeah, that. Yeah. Well, first of all, Donna's like, you meet Trina up, and then her eyes fill with tears, like, oh my God, stop being such a dumb baby. But good for you. Like, the fact that you made that shit up, stole it from a movie, and Kelly, who was being a rag anyway, bought it? Good.
It worked. Okay, yes, Kelly was being a rag. Agree. But I think that's pretty fucked up, actually. Like, I feel like it would be different if Noah was like, went to Donna first and was like, the only thing that is going to shut Kelly up is if I tell her this. So just, like, play along. But for him to sell the lie with her and basically also be lying to her is messed up, especially especially given what they've been dealing with over the past several episodes, like the whole sticking point of their relationship. Granted, she keeps like backing away from it and letting him get away with shit, but it's all been about him lying to her. And here he is doing it again. Like, Kelly is right. He does cut corners.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, I really have an issue. Like, if the show is just not going to take it seriously that he raped Valerie.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's a little bit difficult to see that, like, that's fucked up, especially at this point in the season where, let's be honest, we're all just waiting to see what straw is going to break the dumb baby's back so she gets back with David.
That's true. You know? And yes. And granted, like, this incident is like not even in the bottom 5% of fucked up shit Noah has done.
Yeah.
But still, I feel like it's different. Him once again lying to Donna as along with Kelly. Like, I agree. It's somewhat mitigated by the fact that Kelly is the main victim because she sucks so much. But yeah, I thought that was.
Yeah. And it's also just like Kelly's whole thing. of like blaming someone else for Mel going to a strip joint when Mel, like, first of all, go to strip joints or don't, but don't go to one that's in the fucking Peach Pit after dark where everybody that your kids know lives.
Yeah.
Like, even if it's after hours, why that's being projected onto Noah, except like you would think that Kelly would blame Gina almost exclusively.
Yes.
Like, this is just an excuse to hate on Gina for Kelly, which, like, fine, but you already hate her. So,
right.
And you don't even know why you should hate her in this particular scenario. Exactly. So, like, Noah, I think, is just a collateral idiot here.
Agree. Yeah. Anyway. Also, there's the part that she's dealing with less is that, like, he's being imposed upon her as a roommate, which, like, we never saw a conversation happen between Donna and Kelly where she was like, is it actually okay if he moves in?
Right.
Anyway, Dylan uncaps a couple of beers for himself and Andrew and asks what Andrew told people at the center about his injuries. It's the same cover story he told Gina, that he was in a fender bender and needed a few days off. Patty, the homophobe, came over and Andrew's partner answered the door to their one-bedroom apartment. I mean, he could have just been visiting if he wanted to continue the lie, but okay. The story continues in clip 16.
You know, when I said it was a car accident, Patsy never even asked if it was my fault. But when I said I'd been gay bashed, she looked at me like I'd asked for it.
Give her some time to adjust.
Oh, she suggested time as well. I said I'd be back to work on Monday, but she urged me to take a few weeks minimum. In fact, she insisted.
You knew that you'd have a fight on your hands.
I need some sleep. I gotta look for a job tomorrow.
And Dylan has nothing to say to that because it's something he literally has never, ever done one time in his life, ever.
Yeah.
And in Gina's room, Gina and David are boning and grossing me out. It's like so uncomfortable knowing that they were a couple for real because it's like, it's too real. Like, as gross as it is when Donna kisses Noah with like her entire tongue visible, like, this is worse.
Yeah, it is. Especially when you know that they had a kid and named it Cassius with a K.
Back to Dylan's suite where he opens the door to Kelly. And oh, my God, she's been listening to this very episode of the podcast. Just kidding. Clip 17.
I was on my way to Matt's and I realized there were no pictures taken of me in my wedding gown.
Yeah, well, never said I saw any pictures.
Yeah, you said you saw me in my wedding gown, but you weren't there.
You wore a low-cut white thing. It was puffy.
That pretty much describes just about every bride.
Okay. Your hair was up.
It was wrong. Curly.
I always thought you should have left it down.
I can't believe you were there.
I flew in from Europe at the last minute. I was coming up the path in the back of the church, and I saw you.
You left without saying hello to me or your friends?
Well, then it hit me. I realized that you were going to marry someone else, and I didn't want to see that. Weren't you on your way to Matt's? Maybe I shouldn't have brought that up, huh?
Probably not.
This was not so long ago that you couldn't just look at the fucking footage of, like, nothing about this is correct.
Well, I mean, the dress had a full skirt. I can understand a straight man describing that as puffy.
No, that part's fine. And then she rightly is like, that's most wedding dresses.
Yeah.
Her hair was too short to be up or down. Curly is correct. They weren't at a church. They never got there.
No, they were at the church.
Were they?
Yeah. They told everybody that the wedding was called off. Everyone was seated.
Oh,
they were
at
the church.
That's right.
They were at the
church. That's right.
But yeah, her hair, I mean, arguably she had the sides pinned up. It's hard to say because they came back from from the summer off.
Yeah.
And her hair had grown like 5 inches. So,
and are you going to mention that you came back from Europe having been with presumably Brandon?
Yeah.
Whoops. Sorry.
We get it, Dave. God. And like, you were marrying my best friend. You were marrying my girlfriend's brother. You were marrying Brand. Like, say the name, Brandon.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, the way he describes his second thoughts is like, okay, I guess the writers of this episode also saw Ross's second wedding on Friends, which had happened by this point, and like, that's what happened with Rachel, but sure.
Okay, sure.
Anyway, that's the episode. Dave would like us to hurry it along, so I guess let's get to ranking. Most valuable player, Donna, champion of the scavenger / treasure hunt.
Joan, both canine and human. Canine for being super cute and human for not having to appear in this episode.
Least valuable player. Dylan, neglecter of dogs and creepy wedding stalker.
Neglecter of dogs, creepy wedding stalker, and but actually-er. Or well, actually, are of privilege, like unprivileged experience. Shut up, Dylan.
Totally. Let's do the Kim challenge.
Bad, bad, and dangerous to me.
Aww. Five ways from this episode, Dylan proves he is mad, bad, and dangerous to note. Guys, we it's hard, but we have to do it. This is what we have committed to do. He doesn't have a CD player in his car. That is bad for 1999.
It's also bad to drive Vanessa Marsil's character around in a convertible with the top down and not at least offer her a like hat or kerchief to keep her hair nice and shiny, the wind whipping it all around.
Mm-hmm. It's really bad to lecture a gay man multiple times in a single episode about what he owes to the gay community.
It's dangerous to try to take on a bunch of bat-wielding bigoted thugs when you weigh 128 pounds.
It's bad to break up with Gina. She's so pretty.
I know. And plus, then she's going to get with David. What are you doing?
I know. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Next time on Again With This, another Thanksgiving goes all to shit when Janet goes into labor, Mel and Jackie's divorce divides the gang, and Dr. Martin's spot is blown up Golden State Killer style when a genealogy program reveals that Gina is Donna's cousin, slap, and she's her sister, slap. But this double episode bird is stuffed with filler and evidently sponsored by Big Butterfly Clip. As you'll see in the visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This, you can find those on the website. That's againwiththis90210.com. You can get selected visual aids by following us on Twitter at AWT90210. I'm Worthless Peach Pit Gift Script Sarah T. Bunting. I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is beleaguered mattress store manager Tara Ariano, and she is on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Lawn Santa Amber Alert David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoni.
My butt!